This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Tis that time of the season when the ghouls and goblins prowl. Witches ride their broomsticks and bonehead wildcats howl. So scrape your claws together and make some chilling noise for your haunted wildcatters, those spooky Bosco boys.
Ooh, Bosco boys.
Come on, boys.
The boys are back, and it's time to preview the K-State Texas Tech game. I have a beer of the pod, but before we get into it, beer of the pod is presented by Symbol. Symbol is the stock market for sports that allow you to profit off your sports knowledge. And on Symbol, you can trade sports teams just like stocks. Every time your team wins, you earn a cash payout as well. Use your sports knowledge on Symbol, buy low, sell high, earn cash payouts when your team wins, and you can join over 7,000 early adapters who have already started to invest in their favorite teams. Visit www.simbull.com, that's Symbol, to create a free account. And when you deposit, make sure you use the promo code SD for a deposit that is risk-free. Visit Symbull.com, use promo code SD, deposit is risk-free. That means if you lose money, Symbull will refund your deposit, no questions asked. And if you just don't like it, if it's not for you, just let them know. They'll reimburse you your entire deposit. Join Symbull today and start investing and profiting from your favorite team. I'll tell you what, when I got in on it, I bought the Chiefs before they won their game. They already went up in price. I got the Cats because I think they're going to bounce back. But I also have two rivals to those teams because I think they're undervalued, especially for what they're doing right now. And that's the Chargers. And believe it or not, I actually bought stock in the Baylor Bears. So I'm not proud of those two, but I bought stock in those two teams.
I'm excited to play around with this. I haven't bought any teams yet. I looked at it briefly today. I'll be honest. My first instinct, and I know this is one of our sponsors, my first instinct is that of what Locker Room was. Like, this is stupid. I can't imagine this catching on. But the more I think about it, the more I do think that this is going to be one of those things that does absolutely catch on, and it's going to be a lot of fun for folks, just like Spotify Green Room has turned out to be. So I would definitely, you know, if you're listening, take a look at it, play around. It seems pretty cool.
Especially in this day and age where everyone's trading crypto and stocks, mm-hmm. and day trading stuff that they have absolutely no clue about. You guys are watching football. You guys are watching the NBA. You guys are watching baseball. You know a lot more about that than you do about, you know, Dogecoin. So right. Have a little fun over at Symbol. And again, every time a football team wins, you're getting a 50-cent payout per share. So again, buy the Cats, hold on to them for a few years. You're getting your investment back just in that. And then by then, we're gargantuan. Sell them for, you know, 2x what you paid for them. So get over to Symbol, have a little fun, promo code SD. All right, let's get into Coach Klieman's press conference. I'm actually kind of going to try to buzz through some of the kind of basic stuff because he did go viral for a bad reason from his press conference, and we'll spend a little bit more time on that. So I'm just going to buzz through most of this. Stop me if you kind of want to interject anything, but he really talked about, he was asked about the offensive game plan. He said between the chunks that Texas Tech gives up running the ball, and then they're anticipating there being a bunch of wind there. They said establishing the run is going to be super important. I think we all agree. Anytime you go to Texas Tech, never know what the wind's going to do. Boom Massey is either going to be back this week or next week, doing a few things in practice, going to see how he responds. Again, we've seen what the defenses look like, you know, past Khalid Duke. You really need Boom back in there. Says the message to the team after starting 0-3 conference play is the same. It always is. He's really big about that 1-0 every day and every week. Whatever. He seemed very irritated, and I think this kind of maybe is what kind of got the ball starting. He was asked multiple questions about the wide receivers, multiple questions about getting tight ends the ball. He really just said, hey, look, you know, you can't force stuff. You have wide receivers. You have running backs that can catch the ball. You have tight ends. Can't be forcing stuff. And, hey, the other team's going to try to take away some stuff. So he started getting a little irritated around there. Then he was asked about, hey, how do you balance the idea of you can't give up big plays and you have to be aggressive? He said, well, you can't have the mindset that you can't give up big plays because then you're going to be playing on your heels. Said that the defense needs to get back to basics so they can play faster. Really championed Skyler, you know, some of the big plays that we've had so far this season when he's out there have been when he's, you know, made checks into those places. They trust him to make those decisions, distribute the ball, make the right checks and all that stuff. Says they do have a turbo offense ready. It's something that's based on personnel, but something they're talking about when and how often you use it as a staff.
That'll have to see to believe.
Well, they tried to do it versus Iowa State, and then they just kind of found themselves. I kind of believe it with the personnel, but again, you have to commit to it and truly go with it. Yeah. So I believe it, but again, I think it's a mistake. They don't go to it more often. But here's when stuff kind of started going awry. There's one other thing. He said that the DBs have been in position. They have to actually go ahead and make those plays. Kind of agree with them, but like whatever. No one's talking about that. So, if I was a little bit more dedicated, or if I had a little bit more savvy, I would drop the clip in here. But basically, the gist of it was. He was asked about, you know, the atmosphere inside the program and asked about, hey, what's the mentality? And he really started off saying, hey, the coaches had their meetings on Sundays and the captains had their meetings on Sunday and said, hey, we need to take ownership. Coaches need to do better. Leaders need to do better. Everyone needs to own their role and do better. But where it popped off is towards the end of it, he started talking about having to keep everything positive, and this is where it kind of went off the road. And again, I'm not going to try to think of what I want to say. I don't want to crucify Kelch Robinette because he's a friend of the show, but his tweet, which is getting the most pub, is kind of what set it off. The tweet was Chris Klieman just suggested that he could use the media's help in being more positive with the K-State football team as they try to bounce back from a 3-game losing streak. Awkward is what he said. And that's the tweet. I read it word for word. Yeah. When you go back and watch the clip, John Kurtz tweeted out, it's on the KSO YouTube page and all this type of stuff. It didn't go quite like that. Some people might even say it's worse. I don't think so. But really, Chris Klieman said, hey, look, we all need to be more positive. And, you know, it starts with everyone in this room. I'm looking at you. Like, and he says, I need some help. You know, they can't handle negative feedback as much. 18 to 22-year-olds don't handle negative feedback as well when it's being thrown at them consistently, all this type of stuff. Here's where I think Chris Klieman went wrong, because I think it was the first major PR mistake he's ever made at K-State. I think some folks have projected on him. I think he made a PR mistake by saying, hey, everyone here in this room, almost referencing the media, whether or not he meant it to be like that or not, that was a massive mistake. If he would have said, hey, look, we need the fans to stay positive, because he referenced that, hey, how tough that start to Big 12 play was, which it was. It was the three best statistic teams in the conference. Advanced stats back it up. I get all that. But if he would have said, hey, you know, we need the fans to try to be more positive and kind of put it back towards the fans instead of the media, he still would have gotten flack. He 100% still would have gotten flack, but it wouldn't have turned into this meme where all these journalists are tripping over themselves to try to dunk on. And again, I was watching it. My first interaction was, oh no, this is not going to go good. And then when that tweet came out and seeing everything, I tweeted out, this is Chris Kleiman's first massive PR mistake as coach of the Wildcats. So again, it's not nearly as bad as what everyone is trying to make it out to be. And journalists, because they have a way bigger ego than they do, or that they need to, they're going to go even further in on it because they're like, oh, it's not our job. You know, it's your job to win games, yada, yada, yada. I've already seen it from all sorts of blue checks who have never even watched a K-State football game. That's being blown out. And again, this is going to be something that will follow Chris Kleiman probably rest of his tenure at K-State, that quote, whether taken in context or out of context.
Yeah, I think, Kellis's tweet was not, you have to watch the clip. That's really the only way to do it justice. I don't think Kellis's tweet is very well reflective of the reality. And I don't know. I don't love it. I don't love it. I don't love his tweet. That little extra awkward jab is kind of annoying. But I agree, it's not the greatest optics, but I'm going to try my best to play devil's advocate and at least try to see the other side of this and try to be as objective as possible. But let's get something straight. You know, first of all, before we burn, Chris Kleiman at the stake for, you know, simply looking after his kids. I mean, these are in fact kids we are talking about, which I do think often gets lost in the process of supporting and covering college athletics.
But, so time out. I have the clip. I have no idea how good this is going to come through. If I just,
play it, it'll sound, I'll hear what it sounds like.
Yeah. All right. Hold on.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Sometimes we all have a tendency to take it from the negative standpoint. I'm telling you guys, 18 to 22 year olds can't handle the negative side of things. And we have to, I'm asking you guys, I'm asking for your help. We need to be more positive. I know we can play better. You know, we can play better, but we've got to give these kids more positive things because we got a great locker room in there. Kids that do care about each other, kids that love each other, coaches that believe in these kids, and we can't give up on them.
How'd that sound?
It sounded fine. I think that that'll play through. We should get a soundboard, man. But I don't hear that and get, you know, Chris Kleiman suggested he could use the media's help. Like jumping to that and saying awkward is like so clickbaity and just hacky as hell. And I find it to be very annoying, but let's get back to the point. You know, Kleiman is coming off a season characterized by uncertainty, isolation, trauma, anxiety, driven by, you know, the pandemic, nationwide social justice protests spawned by like a police officer violence being broadcasted across the globe, a very divisive and, you know, vitriol-filled political landscape. Everything that could have possibly happened last year, you name it, it basically happened. All the while these things are happening, you know, Kleiman and the coaching staff were essentially barred from any meaningful face-to-face time with their team due to COVID protocols. So I think, you know, Kleiman and this coaching staff have probably seen firsthand the mental health consequences of a negative, you know, quote unquote, negative toxic environment within his program. He knows how easily it can spiral, how easily it can snowball. I don't condemn, you know, Chris Kleiman one bit for encouraging more positivity surrounding his players. I think it's a moment he's going to regret because I think his actual intended message gets a little bit lost in translation. And secondly, I think, you know, it is not the media's job to be positive propagandists for the program. I think this is just reflective of Kleiman's nature, kind of as a caregiving type of guy, a caregiving man showing itself a bit. I don't think it's a glaring flaw against Kleiman as a man or even as a coach, but it does raise slight concern for me, you know, that the possible current state of the program behind the scenes is a little bit more tumultuous than we previously thought. It opens them up more to direct criticism simply because, you know, we are on a long conference losing streak, and saying this makes it seem like, you know, he's in over his head or he can't handle the pressure. It was asked before we hired him. We talked about it before. How does he handle losing? I think this week more than ever, we will find out how we handle losing. We said it was critical to beat Iowa State for the season, but that was really the ceiling of the season. That was for a magical season where we wanted to end up challenging, you know, for a title. Beating Tech is now actually critical for the life of the season. This is where we evaluate whether Climbing can handle losing and can handle the pressure and the adversity at this level. If we lose to Tech, the wheels are coming off, Scott, like Tottenham Hotspur in a late April title race. It's going to be ugly. I think also literally the only thing this man needs right now is 1 to 2 wins to stop the bleeding. Because let's be honest, if he said this today and we were 5-1 or even 4-2, even if we were 4-2, people would probably be applauding him. You know,
like, I don't know if people would be applauding him because as I said in the review show, K-State fans are not unique. They're not special. And we all are almost like 95% of us root for our predictions and they always revert back to that. I think you and I actually are two folks who don't do that. I think, and that doesn't make us any more special. I think it just means we have a podcast and things go better when we're winning and successful. Like if we didn't have this podcast, I can't promise that I would have done a complete 180 on Bruce and I wouldn't have done a complete 180 on Chris Climbin. But at the end of the day, like there are a lot of folks who didn't like Gene Taylor becoming AD and a lot of folks who did not like Chris Climbin being hired. So here they are, you know, finally blood in the water. And this was just even more chum. I think that folks would still be freaking out about this if we were even 5-1.
That might be true. But I personally, you know, I will step back. The reality is we're 3-3. It's not fun. It's not exciting. It's not glamorous, but our opponents that beat us are combined 17-2. Two of them are in the top 10. One loss to with a backup quarterback on the road in a place we never fucking win. You know, this isn't Baylor on the road last year yet. We've lost to three good teams in a row, three better teams than us. It's very frustrating. It's a gut punch. And that I do, like I said, he's going to regret saying that, but I don't take it nearly as poorly as the timeline and probably the dumbass boards are saying. Like, no, I just feel like it's a little lost in translation.
I think if he words that better and makes it so it's like, he's not asking the media, you know, because again, it's not the media's fault, but I stand by it. We said it last week on the preview show. I said it on the review show. I'm not, what I'm about to say is not me telling fans what to do. That's not what I'm trying to do. Someone will take it that way. This is not what I'm trying to do. But it's definitely not the media's job to cheerlead or to be positive, yada, yada, yada. But it kind of is the fans. Again, I'm not telling fans they have to pump sunshine and all that type of stuff. But it's like the whole idea of being a fan is you're cheering for your team. You want your team to succeed and all that type of stuff. You should not be doing stuff that is detrimental towards the team being successful. There's fucking clowns out there with burner accounts tweeting at recruits while they're on their visit saying, oh, you can't be coming to K-State as long as Climbin's there. I mean, again, those very well could be KU fans or Nebraska fans or someone like masquerading. You know, it's very easy to do that on Twitter on an anonymous account. You put a picture up there, yada, yada, yada. That's quite easy. But again, you have that, but you have fans who are just going full melt, tweeting at players, saying bad shit about the team. And again, that is their right. I'm not trying to tell you what to do. But if he presents as, hey, it's the fans' job to cheer for the team, like that, I think that would have played, probably wouldn't have played out better amongst the fans, but at least you wouldn't have a bunch of journalists dumping on you. But again, I think that would be much more reasonable. And I kind of think that's what it was. I don't think he was like truly speaking to, you know, Kellis Robinette and the Kansas City Star or whoever the beat writer for the Topeka Capital Journal is. I don't think he was looking at them and saying, hey, random beat writer guy, write something nice about Cooper Beebe instead of talking about our defense. I don't think that's what he's doing. I think he was trying to speak to the fans, and it obviously didn't play out well. And it obviously is going to be something that is going to be played in reference every time something bad happens. And I'm not going as far as saying that's a sign that the culture isn't as good. Because here's the thing. We saw how he acted in the media when the culture wasn't good. I mean, he was saying, hey, we have to work on stuff inside the locker. He's not afraid to, you know, say that. He would never call anyone out individually, but I didn't take it as that. I think he really was basically pleading with the fans to say, hey, just chill a little bit. Look at who we've played. But again, it didn't come
I don't think the culture is bad at all, for what it's worth. I think the culture is probably excellent. Honestly, this seems like it's been said many times. This is like an extremely tight-knit group, and I've only heard positive things about, you know, the attitude out of the locker room. I don't have any real concerns there, but I think we're just seeing a guy who's frustrated. He started 3-0 and now he's 3-3 and 0-3 in the conference, and the pressure's on. No doubt about it. He's feeling the pressure, but I can't listen to that clip and fucking come away from it like, yeah, he's asking the media to write nice things. That just irks me.
Yeah. But, and again, I think a lot of folks were chasing retweets and likes, but again, it's also not there. I mean, you know, he didn't use quotation, like, again, yeah. Kelce's defense. He didn't use quotations. It wasn't like a complete bastardization of it. But I do think it was a tweet for that was, he wanted to garner likes and attention, and he got them. But again, you listen to the clip. I mean, it's not a great clip. Like, I'm not trying to say it's like a great clip. I just don't think it's nearly as bad as that tweet made it out to be. And if Kelce doesn't send that tweet, and again, it's not his job not to, but if that isn't the tweet that goes viral, and instead it's just the video clip, it's like, oh, Kleiman, interesting quote here. I don't think it's going nearly as viral, and I think fans are still probably going to melt down, but probably not to the extent.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have anything else to add to that. But hey, before we get to Wildcat Roundup, let's wish a Bosco's Boys happy birthday to the greatest coach in our lifetimes in the basketball program, Mr. Bruce Weber, the Silver Fox.
Dude, Brucey is – and I'll tell you this. First off, happy birthday to Bruce. Probably my all-time favorite show that we've done.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm like weirdly super excited for the basketball team.
Me too.
Especially coming off two like legitimately, again, here we are, you know, two historically bad seasons. Yeah. I don't think either one of us would have batted an eyelash if he would have been fired.
No, he probably deserved to be fired. Yeah, but
he's not. He's back. I'm all in. And I think we're back in, we're 100% back in postseason play. I think we're going to be challenging for the NCAA tournament, and we got some fun non-con games too.
Yeah, that's the thing. We have a fun schedule, but also we have a lot of really fun players. Last year was just a taste. It was just a taste. You know, we have a huge core of young sophomores that really are all very exciting. And last year, think of how big of a jump they've probably made in the offseason. With last year, you know, it was a COVID basketball season too, and that was marked by many problems as well.
And how much fun were they down the stretch too?
They were really fun. It was super positive towards the end, and you know, they showed like they were really starting to kind of click and pick it up the system. And you know, a Mike McGurl quote had my mouth watering a little bit late recently. He said something along the lines of like, it's unbelievable how much further we are right now than we were at this point last year. And it's like, yeah, I think that this team legitimately has some of the ingredients to click. And I don't know, I think we could be as good as, you know, middle of the road in the Big 12, and that's good enough for obviously a tournament team. So
definitely. And speaking of the basketball team, something I'm really excited for, and don't get me wrong, I love our live shows. Still, for the next few weeks, every Wednesday, 7 p.m., Spotify Green Room. Download it on your Apple, iOS, or Android app store. But here's the thing. Spotify Green Room is going to be massive during basketball season.
It's going to rock.
Instead of doing our Wednesday 7 p.m. shows, longtime listeners recall the quick take, hot take shows. So sometimes it would be both of us. Sometimes it would be just me. But I would do something at halftime and something immediately after the game to get an instant reaction to the midweek basketball games out there in the ether instead of doing scheduled midweek shows. So during basketball season, we're going to start this. I don't know if we're going to do it. I think the exhibition game is on a Sunday, but I don't know. I should have pulled it up. But for all weeknight basketball games, so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday games, we're going to, instead of do a scheduled kind of structured live show like we've been doing for football season. We are going to do just instant reaction. It'll be, okay, hey, give me a quick take or a hot take. So something, hey, instant reaction, which some of the quick takes last year for me was just like, oh, Davion Bradford, he's going to be great, yada, yada, yada. And then like some hot take. I don't know what distinguishes a quick take from a hot take. I was just making shit up. But we're going to have a lot of fun on Spotify Green Room during basketball season. I'm excited for it. But let's get into the primers segment of the week. So for Wildcat Roundup, we have our girl Kelsey Bigelow back. She's doing work for ESPN Plus, 1350 K-Man, KStateHD.TV. She's giving us our Wildcat Roundup. She is, not to throw shade at anyone else, I love Colin. Colin's done great. Both Colins, Colin and Connor, both have done great Wildcat Roundups. But Kelsey is next level. She is legitimate. I hope she never launches a K-State sports podcast because she would put us out of business. Our Texas Tech primer is from, our guy Spencer Rogers. He is over at the 23 Personnel. He's our sports drink brethren. He was tweeting at us, and he forgot to mention this in his primer. But you know, all the boneheads were picking Texas Tech to go under 4.5. I'm pretty sure they're already at 5. So he got a tweet out there. I wish he would have remembered that for his primer. And then we got from Aggieville Alley Cats, our boy Ace. He's delivering the K-State primer. So after you guys hear the primers, we'll be back to keep talking K-State Texas Tech.
What is up, fellow Wildcat fans? Kelsey Bigelow once again with you, a senior at Kansas State University, but let's be honest, you guys don't care, and I can't say I blame you. You're here for Wildcat Roundup, which is exactly what I'm going to give you. We'll get things started with the Cats soccer team, who coming into this week was playing fantastic, out of their minds. Three big-time matches, huge matches, massive matches, if you will, that win at Kansas in overtime thrilling fashion. Then the draw against number 9 West Virginia, and then a draw against number 23 Baylor. As head coach Mike DeBeany put it, and I can't really think of a better way to put it, quote-unquote, resilient effort. That's exactly what it was. It was absolutely insane. That sums it up perfectly. The Cats soccer team, they head into this week. They regroup, recover, travel down to Stillwater, Oklahoma to take on Oklahoma State. Cowgirls in this one, the 44th minute of the game, they looked like they were about to put away a goal. It was a shot from about 18 yards out, slipped between Wehrmeyer's legs, and you guys probably think, oh, well, Wehrmeyer goalie between her legs, that means a goal, but she was actually way off of her line, and luckily for K-State, Aliyah El-Nagar came flying in from nowhere, kicked the ball away. Not technically a save, statistically speaking, because El-Nagar, obviously not a goalie, but mark it up as a save for Aliyah El-Nagar, because it was a big-time play from her. Absolutely saved the goal, and then we go into halftime, knotted up 0-0, nil-nil, if you will. Second half, the half that the Cats have been so dominant at this season, but this time that script kind of gets flipped on its head, and the Cowgirls come out. Oklahoma State went ahead 1-0 in the 75th minute of the game. Allie Jackson 7 yards out. They then went on to add an insurance goal, 83rd minute of the game. Olivia Dow off the crossbar. A little double doink action, if you will. But it finds the back of the net. A goal nonetheless, and Oklahoma State adds to their lead. And they go on to win this one. The two goals, though, in the second half. The first allowed in the second half by the Cats in Big 12 play this season. So as I said, they have been a second half team. Now, they stayed in Oklahoma as they prepared for their match against the Sooners. The Sooners coming into this one 5-9-1 on the season. And the Cats, on the other hand, looking for their fourth road win of the year. Sooners jumped out to an early first half lead, 1-0. The Cats answer back early in the second half, though. And when I say early, I mean really, really, really early. Just 33 seconds into the second half. Kaylee Thornhill, who most of you probably know as the girl who made the game-winning goal against Kansas. This time, though, she sends one over the top for her teammate, Kyler Goins. Now, if you guys haven't seen Kyler Goins play, absolutely ridiculous speed. Like, lightning fast, it's crazy to watch her just get down the field because she is incredibly fast. She goes 1v1 with the defender, then goes 1v1 with the goalkeeper, gets around both of them, wide open goal, finds the back of the net. Fourth goal of the season for Kyler Goins, third most in the Big 12. Now the match, you look at it, knotted up 1-1, but not for too long. The Sooners answered back, 49th minute, a little help of the wind, and the wind at the back of Bree Amos, who took a shot 23 yards out. Once you know it, double doink again off of the side post into the back of the net. Sooners go up 2-1, and that would be the final score. Cats drop to 6-8-2 on the season. Now K-State travels to Fort Worth, Texas, as well as many K-Staters, because Texas is the big go-to place for this week up ahead, but they will travel to Fort Worth, Texas to take on 11th-ranked TCU. That game kicks off 7 o'clock Friday night under the lights. The Cats will then round out their regular season with one final home match under the lights October 28th against the Iowa State Cyclones. Cats, Cyclones, that game can be watched on Big 12 Now on ESPN+. And tickets, as always, if you want to watch the soccer team one last time, highly recommend. They can be found at kstatesports.com/tickets. Now, the volleyball team. They are 6 games into conference play, sitting at 2-4 in the conference, 11-6 overall. They took on a very, very experienced West Virginia team this past week. Now, match one of the series went in favor of the Cats. 4 players reached double digits in this one. Now, I don't know if you guys remember the last time I was on the show, but I told you to remember 3 names. I sure hope you remember them, because those names remain the same. Aaliyah Carter, Jaden Nimhard, and Tiana Adams-Cottinoe, they led the way in this one. Carter getting it done again, another double-double, no surprise there, doing Aaliyah Carter things. 18 kills, 16 digs. Jaden Nimhard, who actually had her big breakout game against West Virginia last season, had a little bit of a deja vu type of game, tacked on 14 kills of her own, and of course, Tiana Adams-Cottinoe, 46 assists, 10 digs. Now, like I said, it was a team effort, though, so those 3, yes, led the way, but you look at Katie Fernholz, she tacked on 11 kills, 6 blocks. Holly Bonde, 10 kills, 4 blocks. The Cats were firing on absolutely every cylinder in this one, including the defense, too. 4 players with double-digit digs in this one. Try to say that 5 times fast. Double-digit digs. That's a mouthful. Anyway, doesn't matter. K-State down early in this one, 6 points. They then go on scoring 9 of the next 12 points. And if you guys can do math, that means 12 apiece. One of just 8 times this set was tied. Cats squeak out the win. They squeak out the win in the match as well. In 4 sets, they drop set number 2, go on to win sets 3 and 4. Moving to series finale play Friday night, the story very, very, very different. Cats seem to be missing on mostly every cylinder. They fell in 3 sets, recording season lows in total kills and hitting percentage, but can't take anything away from West Virginia, Big 12 leader in opponent hitting percentage this season, and they forced 23 errors on the Cats' end of things. Head coach Susie Fritz was obviously not really thrilled about it, but she said it was very uncharacteristic, the offensive approach. But as for defense, she says they should be feeling pretty good about themselves. With that being said, sophomore libero Mackenzie Morris, who maybe doesn't get a whole lot of love, she has played every single set in her career as a Wildcat. She recorded 22 digs in this one, which is 10 career matches now that she has had 20 digs or more. So shout out to Mackenzie Morris. But as for the offensive attack, or I guess lack thereof, Aaliyah Carter led the way again, 14 kills, but K-State fell in 3 sets. The volleyball team now hits the road as they will look to bounce back in Texas against TCU Thursday and Friday. First serve both nights, 6:30. Both matches also can be found on Big 12 Now on ESPN+, or the ESPN app. If you're traveling, K-Man's Rob Velker will have the call, 93.3 FM or 1350 AM, as well as online, kstatesports.com/watch. Cats have a full week up ahead, though. Women's tennis in action as well at the ITA Central Regionals in Iowa City. Thursday through Sunday, they will be in action. If you're itching for baseball, baseball's on slate as well. K-State right here in MHK. 2:30 Friday is first pitch. Rowing team, if rowing is your thing, they will have their first competition of the season Sunday in Lawrence. And finally, of course, the football team looking to get back in the win column against Texas Tech on Saturday. You can find more on all those games, kstatesports.com. Otherwise, that is your weekly Wildcat Roundup. Once again, I'm Kelsey Bigelow, sideline reporter and production member for K-State HD TV, as well as a reporter for News Radio KMAN. Happy to be part of the show. Give me a follow on Twitter at KBigelow72. Until next time, I'm Kelsey Bigelow, and of course, go Cats.
Hey, Wildcat fans, this is Spencer, host of the 23 Personnel Podcast, where we do all Texas Tech athletics. Be sure to check us out. We will have our Kansas State preview episode drop Wednesday morning. You want to hear our side of it. But let's talk a little bit about how Texas Tech has gotten to this point in the season so far. They are 5-2. They overcame a 21-7 halftime deficit to Houston to start off the season, a game that we were all pretty concerned about. Then Tech wins that game 38-21 after a second half shutout of Houston. Left that game feeling pretty good. Then they went and played Stephen F. Austin, the FCS school down here in Texas. Didn't feel so great after that one. We hosted Florida International. Pretty excited after if we were able to hold their running back to just, well, I think something like 80 yards. And then through those three games, Texas Tech was looking pretty good. Defensively, at least on the ground. And they go and they go down to Austin and get blown out by Texas. They lose 70-35 and gave up something like 340 yards on the ground. And at that time we were just hoping that was an anomaly. So far we've seen, you know, only 50 yards per game on the ground from the Texas Tech defense. That they bounced back from that, went on the road and held West Virginia, Letty Brown, Garrett Green to like 100 yards on the ground. And then came back home to host TCU, where they promptly gave up 9 yards per carry, 400 yards to TCU, winning 52-31. So 5-2 on the year right now, about where we thought the team would be. It happened a little differently. Obviously, a lot of the fans were down after the way that Tech lost to both Texas and TCU. The injury news, I guess we have for you guys would be that starting quarterback Tyler Shuck, who transferred in from Oregon, went down in the Texas game with a broken collarbone. At the time, he was going to be listed out 6 or so weeks, which would put us towards the middle of November. My opinion is that he's done for the year. And then we had a safety, Marquise Waters, and a backup running back, Chidarius Townsend, both listed as out for the rest of the season. Everybody else, though, with the way that Matt Wells gives injury updates, his list is day-to-day. That's including running back Taj Brooks, who started the year as a starting running back, as Sir Roderick Thompson was working his way back in. Left tackle TJ Stormont, starting center Dawson Deaton, nose tackle Tony Bradford. Those are all guys that have been listed as day-to-day. Last week, you may have seen it, but Texas Tech won 41-14 against Kansas up there in Lawrence. It was 41-0 going into the last minute of the game with essentially the third string Texas Tech defense in there. They allowed Kansas to sustain a drive and score. Texas Tech recovered the kickoff on their first play on offense, fumbled the ball back away to Kansas, where they were able to go down and score 45 seconds later. So gave up 2 touchdowns there late to Kansas to nullify the shutout, but it was essentially a 41-0 game. Going into it, I didn't think that Texas Tech was going to learn anything about themselves. As bad as Kansas is, it was basically playing an FCS team. If you beat them the way you did, it's because you were supposed to. If you played close or lost, it would have been, you know, into the world. But going forward from here, it really just depends, you know, the expectations on who you ask. A lot of Tech fans are ready to see Matt Wells go. Preseason expectations were 6 or 7 wins, and that most thought that Wells would be extended or retained if Texas Tech won 6 games. But at this point, I think a lot of fans are ready to see him go. There's just been the way that the team has lost, and then going historically, just some questionable decisions from the head coach. And then I guess even more recently, you guys wouldn't know about this, but he has a local radio show every week. He was asked about what his favorite thing about living in Lubbock is. And you know, as someone who has to sell Texas Tech and Lubbock to recruits, he hemmed and hawed about it for a few minutes and basically said, well, it's where my family is after I come home from work. So not a really great thing for your head coach to say that, you know, the best thing he likes about living in Lubbock is where that's where his family is. But moving forward, it's difficult to see Texas Tech winning more than six games this year. And it really depends on how they do, obviously, against the Wildcats this weekend. It's the last game that Texas Tech is listed as any kind of favorable odds for the rest of the season. FBI has, I think, a 55% chance for Tech to win. Odds makers and points and, you know, out in Vegas have this a pretty close game as well. The rest of the schedule for Tech includes road trips to Norman and Waco, and then home games against Oklahoma State and Iowa State. So going 0-5 over these last games is certainly a possibility for Tech. That's something I think that a lot of people would be obviously clear and ready to move on from Matt Wells if that were to happen. Heading into this game, obviously, and it has been for basically forever, at least the past 20 years since Mike Leach, the strength of the offense, strength of the team is the offense. They've been much better on the ground lately, but they've also been pretty explosive through the air. Tech is so far as eighth in the country in yards per play at 7. The problem with having an explosive offense is that Texas Tech, if they haven't been explosive, they've shown the inability to sustain drives. It hasn't been a consistent thing where, you know, they're able to move the ball down the field consistently. You know, at one point in the year, it was early on, if they hadn't hit like a 40 plus yard play, they weren't going to score. The weakness on this team, especially after looking at the Texas and TCU games, is obviously going to be stopping the run. They gave up the 340 yards to Texas and the 400 to TCU. They did bounce back against West Virginia and held them to 94 yards. The defensive scheme, it's the same as it's been the past 3 years under Keith Patterson. It's a variation of the 3-3 stack. The issue with that, though, and a lot of Tech fans are calling for the defensive scheme to be changed, it's not so much that there are three defensive linemen, but it's that Keith Patterson will keep 7 or 8 guys back in coverage. And we saw it against Texas and TCU. Those teams refused to throw the ball, and they didn't have to, obviously, when they had the success that they found on the ground. But Patterson was unwilling to adjust the schemes. We saw some 2 down linemen defensive alignments against Kansas. It's definitely not helping his case. But for Kansas State, I think what they have to do is to look to exploit that. If Texas Tech is refusing to stack the box, you know, if they're remaining a 5 or 6 man box, that you guys should be able to scheme around that to move some of the guys. We've got great size at linebacker, but obviously they're going to be undersized going up against offensive linemen. And his scheme, Keith Patterson's scheme, relies on guys winning one-on-one battles. So if they're not, if the Texas Tech defensive front isn't able to beat their men and to slow down the rushing attack, the defensive backfield isn't great enough to be left on an island and to play pass coverage all day. The defensive front has also shown struggles on creating a pass rush. And it may have actually helped you win the game against West Virginia. We let Jarrett Dagey sit back there in the pocket with 6 seconds left in the game. He, with no pass rush, basically ran it around the clock on himself. But also just we weren't able to generate a pass rush on the last play of the game. So for guys that you need to be looking out for, obviously the backup quarterback, Henry Columbia, he's played here for several years now. He's no slouch as a backup. He's come in and shown he's got great patience in the pocket, good feel for the rush and when to step up and then when to take off. When he's throwing the ball, he's looking for Eric Ezukanma. He's obviously the star wide receiver, an offensive coordinator. Sonny Cumbie has been doing a good job of getting Ezukanma involved. He's great downfield, but he's also just really, really a menace in the open field as you try to tackle him. Early on in the season, majority of his yards were coming after catch and after contact because he was just impossible to bring down. Defensively, look for linebacker Colin Schooler in the middle. He leads the team in tackles. He's only a few tackles shy of only a few tackles for loss away from leading all of college football history in that stat. And in the backfield, look for Reggie Pearson to be an enforcer. He arrived in campus as a transfer from Wisconsin, and since then he's just been creating that that reputation as the hard hitter back there. Most importantly for this game is the Texas Tech ability to slow down the run and to force Skylar Thompson, to flex his muscles through the air. Obviously, we've seen he be able to do that, obviously, against Tech in last year's game, but also in some games this year. But I think if Tech is able to slow down that run and lean more and force the Wildcats more into a shootout, that I think the Texas Tech offense has the advantage. The problem is that Texas Tech has just been abysmal at slowing down the run against teams with a pulse. So for a score prediction for the game, I like the under on this game. I think so far where I've seen it right now is at 61. I think the first team to 30 wins this one. And I think, you know, as a Texas Tech podcast, give me Texas Tech to win this one like 31-27 with the optimism here coming from, I think that they will be able to slow down the run without there actually being any evidence to do so. So with that, if you want to check out the rest of our Kansas State Wildcats preview, check us out on the 23 Personnel Podcast. Scott and gang, thanks for having us on.
Hello to all the boneheads and Wabash cannonballers out there. I'm Ace Edwards, representing the Aggieville Alley Cats, a K-State podcast covering nearly every K-State sport, and I'm proud to be on Bosco's Boys to present to you the K-State primer for the upcoming matchup between your Kansas State Wildcats and the Texas Tech Red Raiders. But before we get into this matchup, let's take a look back to last week to review the Farmageddon game, no matter how painful it might be. In last week's matchup, Kansas State fell to the Iowa State Cyclones 33-20 in a game that was never really close at any point past the first quarter. The Cyclones turned in a great offensive performance against a K-State defense that has been reeling since conference play has started, with Iowa State being led by quarterback Brock Purdy, running back Breece Hall, wide receiver Xavier Hutchinson, and tight end Charlie Kolar. And while K-State had a few decent performances offensively from Skylar Thompson and company, the game was lost due to what could nicely be referred to as lackluster coaching by the Kansas State Wildcats. But the good news for the Cats going into the Texas Tech game is that no additional injuries have been sustained, or at least none that have been made publicly known. K-State is still, however, dealing with key injuries to defensive ends Khalid Duke and Bronson Boom Massey, which has caused a massive dip in defensive line play. But the last time that Kansas State and Texas Tech met up was last year in Manhattan, Kansas, in which Kansas State walked away victorious 31-21 in a game most notable for the injury sustained by Skylar Thompson on a late and dirty hit by Texas Tech, the same injury that kept him from playing the rest of the year and thrust Will Howard into the starting job as a true freshman. For the expectations of this game, if you're not a member of either fan base, it's not looking to be a particularly good game. It's two teams that are struggling to get a consistent foothold after going undefeated in non-conference play, although Texas Tech has been able to get a slightly better foothold than the Wildcats. Within the K-State fan base, however, swellings of discontent are already brewing, so the expectation is that we beat Tech convincingly, given that we've seemingly had their number for a decent amount of years going on now. And these expectations are not necessarily going to be a bad thing to have, because this K-State team does have a number of strengths, but the most important strength will almost certainly be in its offensive and defensive lines, both groups that, while having moments of inexplicable bad play, have been solid for most of the year. The line play for Texas Tech hasn't been the best this year, so look for K-State to try and dominate in the trenches. But with every good must come a little bit of bad, and the biggest weakness going into this game is the K-State defense, specifically the linebacker room in coverage in the intermediate part of the field. After allegedly bringing back the mob, they have fallen from grace beginning conference play. Tech will likely look to exploit this using their spread offense to try and dominate the middle of the field through the air, and in the running game, use options or misdirections to mess with the run fit of the linebackers on defense. If K-State's going to win this game, they're going to need help from some key players. And to my mind, the players that'll mean the most will be Skylar Thompson, and honestly, whoever's playing the weak side linebacker for the Cats. Skylar will be looking for revenge against the team that ended his season last year, and the weak side linebacker is the most commonly read defender in the RPO-based attack of Texas Tech. If K-State's hoping to escape Lubbock with a victory, they'll need to make the quarterback handoff in the RPO game and don't allow Tech to get into an offensive rhythm. Because although Texas Tech is known for their high-octane spread air raid offense, this year they've opted for a more efficient approach, just trying to get into more manageable third downs, and it's something that has been working reasonably well for them. Don't allow them to get into an offensive rhythm and keep them behind the sticks on third down to make them go for those chunk plays, and let the K-State defense try to do what they can. The defense of Tech has a number of athletes, but K-State can score on them. It'll just be about the defense of K-State not making it a shootout. If I were forced to give a score projection, I would optimistically say that K-State gets coached up and learns from last week's loss. And if that's the case, K-State gets the victory 38-21. But that's all contingent on K-State turning in a great week of practice and learning from their mistakes against Iowa State, Oklahoma, and, well, just about every game that they've played this year. Once again, thanks to all the Boneheads and Bosco's boys for having me on the show. If you want to listen to more of me or my wonderful co-host Connor, please be sure to listen to Aggieville Alley Cats on nearly every podcasting platform. And follow us on Twitter at Aggieville ACATS, that's capital A, capital A, and capital C in Cats, and on my personal account at ACEdward00. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and as always, go Cats!
And we are back again. Thank you to all of our friends who knocked out those great primers for us. Kelsey giving us Wildcat Roundup. Our boy Spencer over from the 23 Personal Texas Tech podcast. And Ace from Aggieville Alley Cat. So let's get into it. Plain simple, you know, a 10-win regular season off the table. Second trip to Arlington, it's dead. Having crazy bloodthirsty crowds off the table. So this team really needs a bounce back, but they have to do it for themselves. Again, if we want to think that the culture is really as good as I think it is, what they say it is, they need to really bounce back off the mat. And now, again, it's not any of the players' fault, but again, Coach Kleiman's press conference, again, kind of adds an extra bit of, I wouldn't say pressure, but like a microscope to this game from the outside. So again, is the team as close as they are? Can they be as good as we hope they can be? If that's all the case, they should be able to bounce back and get this win. But if they don't, I mean, Grant, I mean, what is Twitter? What are message board? What is K-State world? What's it going to look like if they can't pull off the win?
Apathy. 100% apathy. See, and there's going to be a lot. There's going to be a lot of anger as well. There's going to be a lot of vitriol towards Gene and Coach Kleiman. They're going to want them gone, and that's really not possible, is it? The buyout is pretty prohibitive at this point. But truly, yes, I agree with you. This game, and really, I mean, the next four games really will kind of tell the tale of where we are as a ball program for me. But especially, we're mostly healthy at this point. We've got Skylar back. We've got our offensive weapons. Our offensive line is, for the most part, intact since the beginning of the year. We've really only had Duke go down as our, you know, major blow. And that's a major blow, no doubt about it.
Boom was playing 65%.
Boom also not playing last weekend is tough. We need to get him back. And, you know, I recognize that those two players being out is really difficult. And when you can't disrupt the defensive line, you can't do a whole lot as a defense. So I agree with you, but we should be able to win these next four games, and we should be able to win this weekend with what we have on our roster right now. No doubt about it. I mean, going into the year, just losing Duke, Duke should not have been as backbreaking as it is. And again, I recognize that he's a very good player and he takes a lot away from our defensive line's functionality, but I don't know, man. This is a pretty big game for this entire staff and the players.
Yeah, I think basically the next four games every single week is like now the new, like, most important game in the Kleiman era, which is going to be exhausting. If they were somehow to be able to pull off 4-0, finally get some of the fans back on board, like, they'll be exhausted if they can pull it off. But we'll see what happens. Again, what's wild about how this season has gone, every single – I did not see a single K-State person predict this to be a loss. And now we are one-point underdogs versus Texas Tech. The advanced statistics all have Texas Tech winning, all of them in a close game. So it's like all the advanced analytics folks have Texas Tech winning close, a toss-up of Tech winning. How do we get to this point? Like, again, advanced statistics have never looked kindly on the brand of football K-State played, going back to Bill Snyder, going back to Chris Common right now. So I kind of get it, but it's like, man, we opened up as a favorite and it swung in less than a day. And this is now, here's the wild thing, because Vegas never posted a SIU line. That was only available offshore. So now this is our sixth game. And we have not been wire-to-wire favorites for any of them. We've only been favorites at kickoff for one, which was Stanford, after, like, that swung the week of the game. It's just kind of wild, again, A, how good the Big 12 is, and B, like, the fact that we beat Nevada and beat Stanford, like, it has to count for something. Again, it won't matter. None of that shit's going to matter if we lose to Texas Tech. I will not be able to come on Sunday and be able to spend any sort of positivity from that. But it is wild to kind of look at it. It's like, okay, on paper, we're ahead of where we probably should be. And I think we've played five of our six toughest games on the schedule already.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm not even going to fucking attempt to try to talk about any sort of advanced statistics. That stuff is over me. It's over my head. I don't pay much attention to it, frankly. But I, you know, just from a gut standpoint, I get kind of a Nevada game feel out of this. I think it is going to be close, but I think, you know, throughout the course of the game, our running game, if we're patient enough, is probably going to grind them down and we'll be able to create some separation. Now, our defense has to play better. Our defense played well against Nevada, and that could be the difference. If Tech comes out and they're passing all over us like they have in the past, we're going to be in big trouble on the road. But I really do think that we have a pretty sizable advantage against Tech with our, you know, running attack. And I just haven't seen enough from Tech to really think that they're going to hurt us that badly. And, you know, defensively, they're very suspect. So I don't know. I'm not super worried about this game. I'm worried about the idea of losing it. But in reality, when I think about it, I just can't. It just seems like the perfect timing for this game. Like, we're going to go to Tech and we match up, I think, well with them. We're going to be able to do what we want offensively, at least against their defense. So I don't know, but that's not the question mark, is it? The question mark is the defense. And that bleeds into the next question. The defense has their back in against the wall. We are trapped in a corner right now. If they don't have, like you say, that fight instinct instead of the flight, I don't know if we will be able to snap out of this losing streak. It might just continue because the defense hasn't shown me really anything over the last three games outside of that second half against Oklahoma State when, honestly, they kind of called off the dogs and it didn't really matter.
I didn't want to believe that leaving the stadium, but like all the evidence points, like, okay, Gundy probably could have scored 50 if he wanted to.
Probably. And I don't know. I mean, if you look at Iowa State outside of that first, just horrendously blown, first play, and, you know, I mean, I don't know, it's just, it seems like we're so, not only is the margin of error still razor thin, but it seems like this team, and you've mentioned this before, it's almost the same in game, they're so dependent on emotional momentum, you know, we almost tied that game 10-10. That would have had such a big, such a different feeling.
Almost went got up down 14-10. I mean,
we fucking should have. I mean, we should have gone. He should have gone for it on fourth down. That's something we're gonna talk about later. But
yeah, but also it's like no DPI call. Phillip Brooks doesn't quite get his hands underneath the
pretty tunnel
weak screen.
Yeah.
I mean, it a lot of stuff happened that drive. Like,
and you know that really, I mean that is indicative of, you know, I think coaching and leadership failure. That not only did, you know, we got down 10-0 and we battled back, nearly took the lead 14-10, should have at minimum tied it, but that was enough. That snowballed from there and they went down, they scored, and that was pretty much fucking it. And it's super frustrating. So yeah, I agree. Defense has to show something for me.
Definitely. You know, Skyler, you know, he was not elite. I would say he probably wasn't even good. I think he was just average versus Iowa State, coming off of one of the best games of his career. Will he be able to bounce back and give us something versus Tech? Here's the thing. I think this is going to be one of the games where we are running the ball a ton. So when the pass is called, Skyler needs to make it count. If we're going for the home run, he has to connect. And again, that's a two-way street. The wide receiver has to bring the ball, and when it hits his hands, they need to make the play themselves. But yeah. I think he needs to make the play when called upon. I don't think he's good enough to be running as much as we'd want him to. But again, when he is called upon, he has to connect with the home run swing. And again, he said in, because he had media availability too, this isn't an overly personal game for him. But I don't buy that. Again, I think Skyler is a guy who loves to have motivation. I think he will hold on to anything he can to get an edge. And here's the thing. There's no doubt about it. It was a dirty, dirty hit, and it cost him his senior season. Now he's back. He was talking about, oh, revenge tour this, revenge tour that. Well, this is the revenge tour game. I know we beat them. But he has to want to have a big game. Now, can he harness that emotion for good? Can he keep some composure? We'll see. But when his time is called, he needs to capitalize.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's less about Skyler for me than it is the supporting cast. But, you know, I think he's better when he's emotional, personally. And I agree. He's totally lying when he's saying that it's not a personal game for him, because that is the type of person he is. He's a super emotional guy. He wears his heart pretty much on his sleeve, and there's no doubt about it that he's going to want to get a one up on these guys. So I feel still pretty confident in Skyler, enough for him to be a solid game manager quarterback as basically at this point his floor. And that should be enough to beat Tech on Saturday. We have enough weapons in the running game that, you know, I don't think Skyler has to go off by any means to beat these guys. And I pray to God that we aren't in a position where we need Skyler to go off on Saturday, because we will be in big trouble if that's the case for the rest of the season.
Well, again, I'm just not to the point where I'm confident enough in the defense getting enough stops. But, I mean, we'll have to wait and see. It's going to be here before you know it. And then the final thing I have in here, and then I'll give you the floor if you want to add anything. And this is really kind of truly what I'm watching for, not what it means. It's truly something I'm going to be watching for. Kleiman did not go for it on fourth down the one time it was a question last week. I mean, will he get back to that? Or was that just like a one game thing? I really, because when he was asked the question about it, he said, you know, with Skylar Thompson inside the 50, you know, in fourth and medium, the fourth and short, he trusts Skyler to make the play. He trusts him to do the checks. He trusts him to get those yards. Well, we didn't do it. He decided to go away from what he claimed, which then makes me think, okay, he thought we were going to be in a shootout with Oklahoma. There was no way to win it, you know, playing, you know, just playing it conservatively or whatever, however you want to phrase it. But he wanted to make people believe, no, that wasn't it. Instead, he decided to go by the book. And here's the thing. By the book, that was the correct call. Go for the tie. It was like, what, fourth and six? No, it wasn't a gimme by
any means. Fourth and three.
It was fourth and three. Okay, that makes it worse. But again, it wasn't fourth and inches.
It's not a gimme.
It should have been a chip shot field goal. in the moment, I was like, all right, go for it. But when I saw the kicker going out there, I was like, all right, that's fine. Get the tie. So I don't want to make this about, oh, he missed it. And I don't even want to make it about, okay, I'm shook with my confidence in the place.
Yeah.
But if you're going to be about that life, be about that life. Make that part of who you are as a coach.
I agree.
And I think more times than not, being aggressive on fourth down is going to work out for you instead of not. So I just hope he gets back to that versus Texas Tech.
Yeah, it's just puzzling because he straight up said, we will go for it on fourth down because we trust Skyler in that scenario. So why even say it if it's just a flat out lie? I don't really understand that. And God, it's just thinking back on that play, it's just so frustrating because it's one thing to lose momentum, not getting a fourth and three. You know, it's one thing to lose momentum that way and be stopped, but to not go for it and then miss a chip shot. Well, and now you're just fucking,
then again,
that's
this
just
is,
eating
this
at
is,
you all night, probably this as is a the, coach, you're second guessing yourself for the rest of the night.
This is like the play progression. On the first down, it was the no DPI call, whatever, moving past it. Then you have a false start penalty. Then you have the tunnel screen, which originally on the field was called a catch, big play, review correctly. He didn't get his hands underneath it. Then after that, you're like, oh God, third and long. You do a deuce draw play where he almost picks it up. You know, he has one guy juke and it's a touchdown instead of going down, doesn't quite get it. And then you think about it and then you kick it and it's a miss. I mean, God, especially for a team that thrives on emotion, that just is a killer. Do you have anything to add in here before we get to keys to V?
I don't.
All right. Keys to V are sponsored by our friend Symbol. Symbol, again, is the stock market that allows you to profit off your sports knowledge. There are two ways to make money on Symbol. First, every time your team wins, you get a cash payout. Second, just like the stock market, if you think a team is going to increase in the value, hashtag to the moon, diamond hands, you can buy low and sell high, and then you profit. If you use promo code SD to make your first deposit, that is risk-free. That means no matter what happens, if you ask for your money back, Symbol is going to give you that deposit back. Again, it's a lot of fun. You might not think it's for you. Do your deposit. Use promo code SD. Put $100 in there. Buy a couple shares of teams, and then just play around because I guarantee you're going to get addicted, and it's a lot of fun. Again, if you're going to be throwing money away on like Dogecoin or trying to do some stupid short sell on Apple stock or some shit like that, don't do that. Have fun over at Symbol because you actually know about sports. All right, let's get to keys to V. These are our keys, what we think it's going to take to win the game. Grant, what's your first key to V?
Joe and Deuce must get loose, Nevada style. I think we got to lean on the run game, make them stop it. If we have to open up the passing game, I think we can with Skyler now. At least we have that capability as opposed to, you know, Oklahoma State, Nevada. It's a lot less limited than it was in those two games. But I think this team's got to get back to the basics. Let's run them to death.
I love it. I think you're probably correct. Mine is going to be win the turnover battle. We haven't won the turnover battle since Nevada. And during this long Big 12 losing streak, I mean, we've just gotten murdered in the turnover ratio, just absolutely murdered. So got to get back to taking the ball away and protecting it. What's your
second key to be is stupid. Let's have some fun again. Losing sucks. Let's go be road warriors by having fun. Let's get a Big 12 win and get, we need some confidence back. The juice has been completely sucked out of the program after a hot start. Everyone was flying high, and no one's having fun anymore. So let's go have some fun and beat Tech on the road for the 9th out of 10 years, I believe.
That'd be wild.
Only loss to them was in 2015 since 2011.
There you go. Let's keep being their boogeyman. My final one is do something on defense. Outside of that second half versus Oklahoma State, they've been Swiss cheese in the Big 12 play. I don't care if it's by hook or by crook. You got to do something to force punts and some turnovers. Give your offense a chance to win. All right, our game predictions are sponsored by Spotify Green Room. Remember, we're going live every Wednesday, Spotify Green Room, till basketball starts. Then we will be going live immediately after the end of basketball games. Download in the Apple iOS store or Android App Store to have fun with us on Spotify Green Room. All right, pick them 15 games, all Big 12 games, ESPN College Game Day game, and the Fox Big Noon kickoff game. Boneheads, had the best week of everyone last week, going 10-5. Grant, you went 9-6. I went 8-7. Grant, you have a 3-game lead on me and the Boneheads. So you will be going right after you say the Bonehead pick. Oh, so let's just get into it. Big 12 games first. Oklahoma and what is going to be their last trip to Lawrence. They've been beating down KU and Lawrence for over 100 years. Boneheads have Oklahoma only 82%. I assume you have Oklahoma as well.
That's got to be the biggest shock percentage I've ever seen.
Well, I think there's a handful of KU fans who follow the show. So I think KU's percentage actually is usually better than you think. So
we got OU, obviously. Okay.
This one, it's the best Big 12 game this week. Bonehead's big on Oklahoma State, 76%. Vegas has Iowa State by 4. What do you have?
I've got the Pokes. I'm the biggest Pokes fan in the world on Saturday. I've been going too hard on Iowa State for them to beat us and then just start a streak.
Well, and they're favorites too on the and it's at home. I'm going to stick with Oklahoma State. And again, it's against my better judgment. My official prediction is Oklahoma State winning, but Iowa State's going to win.
I feel the exact same way. It's going to suck ass. It's but not good. Maybe not. I don't know. I mean, you know, fuck. Oklahoma State's what, 6-0? They've looked pretty solid, so maybe not. Maybe this is Gundy's year.
I mean, we'll see. It won't fare well for my whole Gundy gets fired at the end of the
year. I know. I mean, I had to – yeah. It seems like he's going to get fired every year.
Well, let's just hope he wins tomorrow and then he can lose the rest of his games. West Virginia at TCU. Boneheads, 59% TCU. What do you got?
We got TCU as well.
That's a program that is – on the fucking warpath for Gary Patterson. I mean, it reminds me of the final years of Bill Snyder. Yeah. So I get it, you know.
Wasn't there an article literally saying like something very similar to that?
It was a blog.
Or whatever, a blog that mentioned Bill Snyder. Like, let's not get Bill Snyder territory. Hey guys, I agree. You don't want to get to that territory. It's not fun for anybody.
Yeah. All right. This is what kind of tells you how shitty ESPN is at picking games. They're going to Los Angeles. Imagine how few folks are going to show up like 5 a.m. in LA for Oregon at UCLA. Boneheads of Oregon, 72%. What do you have?
Well, I bet there's probably enough implants over there that'll fill out the crowd, but none of them will be UCLA fans. I've got Oregon.
Yeah, so do I. I got Oregon as well. All right, the Fox big noon kickoff game, Northwestern at Michigan. Boneheads have Michigan 91%. That's a high percent. That's a high percent, though.
It is high.
I'm going Michigan as well. All right, Boneheads, Wake Forest at Army. Wake Forest is on the road at Army. Boneheads have Wake Forest 71%. What do you have?
Wake.
So this is – I'm actually going to switch it up. It's still early in the season for chasing games. But you know what? Fuck it. Go Army. That's what I got. Wisconsin at Purdue. Boneheads have Wisconsin 56%. What do you have?
I have not seen anything I like about Wisconsin this year. I've got the Boilermakers.
I also have Purdue. And what is one of the most wild games, ranked Pittsburgh hosting Clemson. They are the Vegas favorites too. Pittsburgh is also the Bonehead favorites by one vote. Pitt 51%. Grant, what do you have?
Wow, I didn't realize that. Clemson must be having a very – they're 4-2. I got Clemson.
Yeah, I have Clemson as well. But, again,
Pitt.
I would be putting a lot of money on this if betting was legal in Kansas.
Yeah, Pitt still probably my favorite uniforms in college football.
Yes, but top five. The aesthetic looks gross because they're playing in the Steelers stadium.
I hate like, that. Yeah, that's tough.
It really takes away from those uniforms. It's just gross. San Diego State at Air Force. Boneheads have San Diego State 68%. What do you got?
With the Boneheads, San Diego State.
Yep, I'm rocking with the Aztecs as well. All right, maybe the most gaudy rivalry trophy. It's the battle for the jeweled shillelagh. Notre Dame at USC. Boneheads have Notre Dame 80%. What do you got?
I've also got Notre Dame.
I have Notre Dame as well. It is one. It's a wild trophy. Vegas and all the advanced statistics have this one as a very close game, which is why it got in here. NC State at Miami. Boneheads have NC State 80%, though. What do you have?
I've got NC State, too. You know, I'm just shooting from the hip on that one.
I think so, too. But, again, this is one of those games where it's like, I obviously don't have my own advanced statistics models.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, how should this be so close? But it is what it is. Memphis traveling to future Big 12 town, Orlando, Florida, to face the UCF Golden Knights. And it's like their space game. So Boneheads have Memphis 52%. Another close one. Space what game. Do you have?
What's the space game? What does that mean?
Like they do like space themed like uniforms.
Space game UCF. I'm gonna look it up. I've got UCF.
I UCF as well.
Kind of shooting from the hip there too.
This is the biggest blowout of the week. BYU at Washington State. Washington State did fire their coach, but 98% of Boneheads are going with the Cougars. I think it's only a 4.5-point game. This is another one I'd put a ton of money on because I think BYU wins big. I assume you have the Cougars.
I've got the Cougars. I'm really mad I didn't pick Baylor last week to beat them because it was – I knew they were going to beat them. I don't know why the fuck I picked BYU, but BYU bounces back this week, big time.
Nevada at Fresno State. Boneheads still riding hard with the Wolfpack, 77%. What do you have?
I got the Wolfpack. They're studs.
I'm going with, again, I'm probably
– chasing games.
I'm chasing early. I'm chasing early, but I have Fresno State. Again, I'm probably going to regret it, but it is what it is. All right, now it is time for our K-State game. I want a score from you, K-State at Texas Tech. Before that, Bonehead still riding strong, 82% with the Cats. So they're still picking us to win. What do you have? Give me a score.
I got to be honest. I feel incredibly bad about this game. And
like 3 seconds ago, you're like, oh.
I know. Let's be honest. Well, I think we're going to win. But I don't feel good about it. I just don't feel good about the, like, the consequences of what could happen if we do lose. Because the wheels truly will fall off. And I don't want to see that. But I've got the Cats. I think we'll win, you know, I think we'll win by 10, similar to, like, kind of last year's score, 27-17, something like that.
So 27-17 is your official prediction?
No, okay. My official prediction is going to be 31-21.
So I have it 31-34. K-State does win, though. I think it's going to be squeaky bum time. I think we get a couple field goals. I think Tayton Winkle gets kind of back on his bullshit in a good way and it has a perfect game. With, I guess it would be, what, 4 extra points and 2 field goals. I think Texas Tech actually scores touchdown late and then has an unsuccessful onside kick for 34-31. So that's where we're at. Keep riding with us. We're going live. And, again, I'll talk more about it in the – I think probably on the Wednesday live show or the next proper show that we do. But – I'm going to have to stop saying we're going live every Wednesday because, again, basketball is almost here, and then we're going to have to kind of switch stuff up. So that's all we got, but we will be going live Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Spotify Green Room. That's all I got. I'm sure we'll talk Chris Kleiman. We'll talk predictions. Maybe we'll get a basketball prediction question out there as well. But, yeah, we'll talk to the Boneheads soon. Do whatever you want. I'm not going to tell you guys to love anyone. I'm not going to tell you to be nice to anyone. I don't care what you do. Just don't. Actually, no. Do whatever you want. Do whatever you want.
Okay. Chris needs a win this weekend. Big Chris needs a win. Folks, meet me at the cafe.
Shivers down your spine. Shrieking skulls will shock your soul, seal your doom tonight. Spooky, scary skeletons speak with such a screech. You'll shake and shudder in surprise when you hear these zombies shriek. We're so sorry, skeletons, you're so misunderstood. You only want to socialize,
but I don't think we
spooky, scary skeleton. Shout startling, shrilly screams. They'll sneak from their sarcophagus and just won't leave you be. Of bones seems so unsafe. It's semi-serious. Spooky, scary skeletons are silly all the same. They'll smile and scrabble slowly by and drug
you so insane.
Sticks and stones will break your bones. They seldom let you snooze. Spooky, scary skeletons will wake you with
Podcast Network.